William and the White Elephants. William, said Mrs. Brown to her younger son, as Robert will be away, I think it would be rather nice if you helped me on my stall at the Conservative Fete.
What sort of a stall are you going to have? Said William.
A white elephant stall, said Mrs. Brown. William showed signs of animation. And where are you going to get 'em? He said.
Oh, people will give them.
Crumbs, said William.
You must be very careful with them, William, said his father gravely, and be very careful when you're in charge of them. They're difficult beasts to handle.
Don't tease him, dear, said Mrs. Brown to her husband. And to William, white elephants, dear, are things you don't need.
I know, said William. I know I don't need 'em, but I suppose some people do, or you wouldn't be selling 'em.
The subsequent discovery of the real meaning of the term white elephant filled William with such disgust that he announced that nothing would now induce him to attend the fete in any capacity whatsoever. But when the day arrived, William had relented. After all, there was something thrilling about serving at a stall. The white elephant stall contained the usual medley of battered household goods, unwanted Christmas presents, and old clothes. Mrs. Brown stood placid and serene behind it. William stood at the side of it, surveying it scornfully. The other outlaws, who had no official positions, were watching him from a distance. His mother turned to him and said, "I won't be a second away, William, just keep an eye on things," and departed. That was splendid. He moved right to the centre of the stall. A woman came up to the stall and examined a black coat lying across the corner of it.
"You can have that for a shilling," said William generously.
He looked at the outlaws from the corner of his eye, hoping they'd noticed him left thus in sole charge, fixing prices, selling goods, and generally directing affairs. The woman handed him a shilling and disappeared with the coat into the crowd. Soon his mother returned and he moved to the side of the stall. Then Mrs. Monks, the vicar's wife, came up. She looked about the stall anxiously, then said to William's mother, "I thought I'd put my coat down just here for a few minutes, dear. You haven't seen it, have you? I put it just here. It's a black one." William's mother joined in the search. Over William's face stole a look of blank horror.
"Perhaps someone's just carried it in for you," said Mrs. Brown.
"Yes, I'll go and see," said the vicar's wife. William very quietly joined Ginger, Henry, and Douglas, who had watched the denouement open-mouthed.
"You won't half catch it," said Douglas cheerfully. "They'll be sure to find out who did it."
"Tell you what," said Ginger, "let's go and get it back."
A cursory examination of the crowd who thronged the vicarage garden revealed no black coat to the anxious outlaws. They went to the gate and looked up and down the road.
"There she is," said Ginger suddenly, "walking down the road in it. Caw, cheek!"
The figure of a woman wearing a black coat could be seen a few hundred yards down the road. The outlaws set off in pursuit. They slowed down. She went in at the gate of a small house. The outlaws clustered round the gate, gazing at the front door as it closed behind her.
"Well, we've got to get it back," said William.
He swaggered up the path and rang the bell violently. A maid opened the door. William cleared his throat nervously.
"Excuse me. If it's not troubling you too much..."
"Now then," said the girl sharply, "none of your sauce."
William redoubled his already exaggerated courtesy.
"Excuse me, but a lady's just come into this house wearing a white elephant."
He was outraged to receive a sudden box on the ear, accompanied by a, "Get out, you saucy little hound," and the slamming of the front door in his face. William rejoined his giggling friends, nursing his boxed ear.
"I'll go and have a try, shall I?" said Ginger.
"All right," said William. And Ginger, imitating William's swagger, walked up to the front door and knocked. The haughty housemaid opened the door.
"Good afternoon," said Ginger with a courteous smile. "Excuse me, but will you kindly tell the lady what's just come in here wearing a black coat that I'll give her 1 and 6 for it?" And
Ginger also received a box on the ear that sent him rolling halfway down the drive, and the door was slammed in his face. An informal meeting was then held to consider their next step. Then they went round to the side gate, where they crouched in the bushes, watching the redoubtable William as he crept across the lawn up to a small open window. Breathlessly they watched him hoist himself up and swing his legs over the windowsill. No sooner had William found himself in the room than he heard voices approaching the door. He dived beneath the round table in the middle of the room. The lady whom the outlaws had followed down the road, now divested of the fateful black coat, entered, followed by another, more highly coloured lady.
A black coat, did you say?
Said the first lady. William, beneath the table, pricked up his ears.
Yes, if you can, Mrs. Bute, said the highly coloured lady. I only want it for tomorrow, for the funeral.
Well, certainly, said Mrs. Bute. Yes, I can lend you one with pleasure. It's in the hall. It's one I've only just bought.
They went into the hall, and William gathered that the black coat was being displayed.
Quite a bargain, wasn't it?
He heard Mrs. Bute say. They returned, evidently, with the coat.
"Oh, thank you so much, my dear," said the highly coloured lady. "It's just what I wanted, and so smart. What was it like at the fete?"
She was trying on the coat and examining herself smilingly in the mirror.
"Oh, I must say it does suit me."
"Oh, very dull," said Mrs. Bute. "I came away before it was actually opened, just got what I wanted and then came away."
The highly coloured lady sniffed.
I must say that I was a bit hurt they didn't ask me to give an entertainment. People have so often told me no function about here is complete without one of my entertainments, and they're not to ask me to entertain at the Conservative fete.
Suddenly William knew who she was. She must be Miss Pole. He remembered now hearing his mother say only yesterday, "Oh, that dreadful Gertie Pole wants to give an entertainment at the fete, and we're determined not to have her. She's so vulgar, she'd cheapen the whole thing."
"Of course," said Mrs. Bute. "Yes, of course, dear, but the coat, will it do?"
"Oh, very nicely, thank you," said Miss Pole. "Good afternoon, dear."
There followed the sound of the closing of the front door. William retreated through his open window and rejoined Douglas and Henry at the gate. Ginger had vanished.
Quick, said William. She's got it. We've got to follow her. She's got it now.
At this minute, Ginger reappeared.
There's another, said Ginger. There's another black coat hanging up in the hall. I've been round and looked through a little window and seen it.
William said, well, I bet the one she took's the one, because I heard her say, wasn't it a bargain?
All right, you and Douglas stay here, and Henry and me'll go after the other. And I bet you ours is the right one.
5 minutes later, William and Henry stood at Miss Pole's gate. Then, boldly, William walked up to the front door and rang the bell. Apprehensively, Henry followed him. Miss Pole, wearing the black coat, for she'd been trying it on, opened the door.
Good afternoon, Miss Pole. Please, will you come to the fete to give an entertainment?
Miss Pole went rather red and simpered coyly.
Oh, you've been sent on a message, I suppose, little boy. I thought there must be some mistake. I knew that really they couldn't get on without me. They didn't send a note by you, I suppose?
No, said William, quite truthfully. She pouted.
Well, that, I think, is rather rude, don't you? Still, I mustn't keep the poor dears waiting. I'll be ready in a second.
Then Miss Pole underwent a short inward struggle, which William watched breathlessly. It was obvious that Miss Pole was torn between the joy of wearing the coat and the impropriety of wearing for a festal occasion a garment borrowed for a funeral. To William's relief, the coat won the day, and putting on a smart hat with a very red feather, she joined them at the door. William was tense. The next step would be to detach the coat from Miss Pole's person. William had an idea, based on his not inconsiderable understanding of the female psyche. He looked Miss Pole up and down and said, funny.
What's funny? Said Miss Pole sharply.
Nothing. Only I've just remembered that I saw someone at the fete in a coat exactly like the one what you've got on.
There was a silence, and finally Miss Pole said,
It is a little hot, dear, if you'd be so kind as to carry my coat.
She took it off, revealing a dress that was very short and very diaphanous and very, very pink. She handed the coat to William. William heaved a sigh of relief. They'd reached the gate of the vicarage now. They were only just in time. William meant to thrust the coat into the arms of the vicar's wife and escape as quickly as he could, leaving Miss Pole to her fate. It happened that the local Member of Parliament's political agent had collected a large audience into the main tent, where the member was to say a few words on the political situation. The agent was hovering, ready to tell him that his audience was awaiting him when the contretemps happened. Miss Pole tripped airily up to the door of the tent in her pink frock, peeped in, saw an audience with a vacant place in front of them, and skipping lightly in with a "So sorry to have kept you all waiting," leapt at once into her first item, an imitation of a tipsy landlady. The audience, very heavy and respectable, gaped at her astounded. And when a few minutes later the Member of Parliament, calm and dignified, appeared at the door of the tent, he found Miss Gertie Pole prancing to and fro before his amazed audience, her pink skirts held very high, announcing that she was Gilbert the Filbert, the Colonel of the Nuts. The agent, looking over his shoulder, grew pale and loose-jawed. The Member turned to him.
"What's all this?" he demanded.
The agent mopped his brow. I've no idea, sir."
"Please put a stop to it," said the member, and added hastily, remembering that the tent was packed full of votes, without any unpleasantness, of course.
But it would have taken more than a dozen political agents to stop Miss Gertie Pole in full flow of her repertoire. She went on for over an hour. She merely smiled bewitchingly at the agent whenever he tried to stop her without any unpleasantness, and when the member himself appeared to take command of the situation, she blew him a kiss, and he hastily retired. Meanwhile, William, triumphantly bearing the black coat, made his way up to the vicar's wife. He met Ginger and Douglas, also carrying a black coat, and on the same mission. "We got it out of her hall," said Douglas cheerfully. "I bet ours is the one." "Well, come on and see," said William, pushing his way up to the stall presided over by the vicar's wife. "Here's your coat, Mrs. Monks. It was sold by mistake off the rubbish stall, but we've got it back for you, me and Henry." Before the vicar's wife could answer, a frantic messenger came up to her.
"What shall we do? Miss Pole's entertaining the tent and the member can't speak."
"Miss Pole?" gasped the vicar's wife. "We never asked her."
"No, but she's come, and she's singing all her awful songs, and no one can stop her, and the member can't speak."
The vicar's wife, still absently nursing the coat that William had thrust into her arms, stared in front of her. Then Ginger came up and thrust the second coat into her unprotesting arms.
"Your coat, Mrs. Monks," he said politely. "What we sold by mistake off the rubbish stall. Me and Douglas have got it back for you."
They waited breathlessly to see which coat the vicar's wife should claim as her own. She looked down at her armful of coats, as if she saw them for the first time.
But I got that coat back. The woman who bought it thought there must be some mistake and brought it to me. These aren't my coats."
Shrill strains of some strident musical ditty came from the tent. Then a woman pushed her way through the crowds up to the vicar's wife. It was Mrs. Bute.
"Oh, brought it here, they did," she panted. "Where is it? Thieves came into my hall, bold as brass, and took it. There it is!"
She glared suspiciously at the vicar's wife.
"What have you got it for? My coat, I'd like to know. She
tore it out of her arms, and the other coat, too, fell to the ground.
"Oh, my other coat! Both my coats! Thieves, that's what you are, thieves!"
"Where are those boys?" said the vicar's wife very faintly. But those boys had disappeared. They were found, of course, and brought back. They were forced to give explanations. They were forced to apologise to all concerned, even to Miss Pole, who forgave them because her little show had gone off so well. They were sent home in disgrace. William's father said later,
"Well, I warned you, William. I told you they were difficult beasts to manage. Of course, if you lose control of a whole herd of white elephants like that, they're bound to do some damage."
And William said disgustedly,
"I'm just sick of white elephants and black coats. I'm going out to play Red Indians."